One of the things we've inherited as Protestants, and particularly as Congregational Protestants, I and Carl being one by adoption, you understand, from the Methodist tradition, one of the things we have inherited is the spirit of inquiry, the spirit of searching, that itself is sacred and acceptable in God's sight. And so Robin has been doing a series on debunking some ideas about religion, and we want to continue that this morning, thinking about our tradition of freedom of religious thought as it applies to the central Christian notion of the incarnation. Bear in mind, these are some of my thoughts on the matter. You may agree, you may not, that's okay. But something to think about. The word incarnation never really appears in the Christian scriptures. In that term, it is from the Latin, carne, flesh or meat. Incarnation literally means enfleshment. Enfleshment. It does occur by implication. And in the traditional reading from the Gospel of John, the first chapter, the 14th verse, probably the closest paraphrase of the idea, and the word, these quotations are all in your bulletin for your examination now or later. The Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen His glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. And of course, the Orthodox Christian proclamation has been that the divine is incarnate in Jesus as Son of God. We also get that in story form in a very familiar way in the first chapter of the Gospel according to Luke. The story of Gabriel, the angel Gabriel, coming to Mary and saying to her, "Greetings, favored one, the Lord is with you." You may recall this, we come around this every Christmas time, right? That Mary is with child, and the child will be known as Jesus, and He is Son of God. What do these things mean? Well, one of the things I've learned in 30 years of teaching communication at Wichita State is that no text speaks for itself. No text speaks for itself. It makes sense only in context as it's framed. You can take these stories and these scriptural statements literally as history, pointing to the there and then, the first century Palestine. But there's another way to take them, and that is to take them as metaphorical, not mainly or just as there, but everywhere, and not just as then, but as they say, everywhen. What if we were to read the doctrine of the Incarnation through a different kind of lens, not the lens of history, but the lens of metaphor and mysticism? Let me give it a whirl. Why do we celebrate Advent and Christmas every year? Well, so that the Christ may be born in us anew, right? I call your attention to Joseph Campbell's quotation of the contemporary word. He says there's a wonderful line from the 17th century German mystic Angelus Silesius, quote, "Of what use, Gabriel, your message to Marie unless you can now bring the same message to me. If it's just a message for Mary, read historically, then we're just involved in a history lesson. But what if the message to Mary is a metaphor for the message that is to each one of us? That, as we read in Luke, the angel says, "Don't be afraid, for you have found favor with God, and you will conceive in your womb, i.e., in yourself, and bear a son, the Spirit of God." What if we were to see that message as a message not just to Mary in the first century, but to us in the 21st century? Or a book that I recently revisited by Tom Harper called The Pagan Christ, and it's printed for you in the Contemporary Word as well. He writes very early on in the 3rd and 4th centuries of the Common Era, the Christian church made a fatal and fateful error, either deliberately in a competitive bid to win over the greatest numbers of the largely unlettered masses, or through willful ignorance of the true inner sense of the profound spiritual wisdom it had inherited from so many ancient sources. The church took a literalist, popularized, historical approach to sublime truth. What was preserved in the amber of allegory, it misinterpreted as plodding fact. The great truth that the Christ was to come in man, that is, in each human, it changed to the exclusivist teaching that the Christ had come as a man. The vitalizing item of ancient knowledge was the prime datum that man, humanity, each person in him or herself, in their own real being, is a spark of divine fire struck off like the flint flash from the eternal rock of being and buried in the body, flesh of body, to support its existence. We are, each of us, an incarnation of the divine spirit, unique in our own way, as unique as our fingerprints. This is the meaning, metaphorically, of Gabriel's announcement to Mary, that the Christ is born in us. The trick is to recognize it. This is what the Buddha experienced after 6 years of sitting in the lotus position without moving. That's not to be interpreted literally. It's a metaphor. But after 6 years of contemplation, the Buddha waked up and thought, "Oh, I could have had a V8. It's already here in each of us if we but see it. This is the challenge. You are the spark of divine fire, a chip off the old block, as it were. Each of us on our unique spiritual journey. And the Christ principle is within us if we embrace it." And so, hear Gabriel's words to Mary as Gabriel's words to you. When we sing, "Precious Lord, take my hand," he already has. "Good Lord, show me the way," it's present in you, in me, in us here. The Word has become flesh. For now, for a while, in each of us, and in each succeeding generation, and in each preceding generation. Acknowledge it. Embrace it. It is the unique gift that we celebrate, not just at Advent and at Christmas, but throughout the year. For me, this metaphorical, mystical reading of the Incarnation brings it alive. It has been the minority report in Christianity for two millennia, not the majority report. The majority report says, only in Jesus, and that's why we're better than all other religious traditions, because we've got the only unique incarnation. I think it's time in a global world to put on different spectacles and to see our unique tradition as one manifestation of the divine presence in the world and in all people. Let us sing together our choral benediction.